This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Bad news, everybody. You know, next man up, Jeffrey. Next man up, Sam Hardiman, actually. He'll be with us in the next segment to talk about all kinds of things, including he had a really interesting conversation with the consultant that Memphis has hired to work with the police. And the police had really interesting, the consultant had a bunch of really interesting things to say about his time in Memphis that I want to get into with Sam in the next segment. But we don't have Chris because he's at shoot around with the Grizzlies. So let's play a game of Believe It or Not. Ja Morant will lead the Memphis Grizzlies to triumph tonight in Dallas.
I'm going to say I do believe that because I don't know if Dallas has any resistance to Ja Morant.
Well, first of all, the main thing is he's not on the injury report.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
That surprised you. Surprised me when it came out. Didn't it surprise you?
Yes.
I mean, after he said the other night, I should not have been out there, for him to not appear on the injury report at all seems kind of surprising. In fact, I would have thought that the natural thing, if you're just looking in the abstract, the natural consequence might have been that the next two games he sits out to get well, right?
Or maybe more.
Or maybe more.
Should I be out there implies like I'm really hurt.
I'm really hurt. I'm not able. This hurts me, and I'm not able to help the team. I shouldn't have been out there.
So, I mean, I have to ask the question, is there some type of disagreement between Ja and the Grizzlies about how healthy he is?
I refuse to believe that the Grizzlies heard that and said, well, screw you, we're not even listing you as questionable. Like, you're hurt, we're not even going to list you as questionable.
I'm not saying that. What I am saying is, like, does Ja think he's more hurt than the doctors do?
I'm sure. Sure. Maybe.
I think Ja says that.
I think he said it after a bad game. I don't even know if he really believes that. I think he said it in the moment. He's frustrated. We see how he's an emotional guy. He didn't play well against a guy who he once considered himself better than and probably still thinks he's at some level, because you've got to have supreme confidence as an athlete that he's better than. And so what do you say You make an excuse for yourself.
Yep, I agree.
And they make the excuse you're making for yourself. I probably shouldn't even been out there, man.
Yes.
I probably shouldn't even been out there. And like Tony Allen, I'm not saying this is an excuse at all for Tony, but if this is just true. When the Grizzlies lost in that series in six to the Warriors, right?
Hamstring.
Yeah, the Warriors stopped guarding Tony.
Yep.
And Tony will tell you today, and he told me that summer, emphatically, I had a hammy. And you can see film, he did have a hammy. But he wants it known that, no, it's not some damn strategy that the Warriors deployed that stopped and embarrassed. And Tony was embarrassed because they didn't even guard him. And he was like, had I had my hammy, I would have blown by them. I would like, it just wouldn't, this wouldn't have been the same. So I think it's natural. And again, I think Ja is hurt. And so what did Ja do in the locker room the other day? What he was saying was, yeah, okay, I didn't look great. That's because I shouldn't have even been out there. But it didn't actually mean he shouldn't have been out there. It certainly doesn't mean he was not going to choose to be out there. And it appears like, anyway, that what's going to happen is, like Gabe asked me yesterday, don't we have the answer on Ja now? And I said, I didn't necessarily think we have the answer on Ja. The answer to me might just be every night's going to be an adventure. We'll see if he plays or not, right? That seems to be it's going to be the answer. But it doesn't feel like they're going to sit him out for 2 weeks to heal.
Yeah, I just also wonder, like, I think we need to send him, like, leadership school.
The problem is there's too many. Don't you think there's been so many people pouring into Ja? I don't know.
To me, the biggest issue that I see right now with the Grizzlies is his mood dictates everyone. I'm even talking the team. Fans and whatnot.
It does. No, I mean, we had the caller yesterday who said they went to the game and it just didn't feel the same.
Yeah.
This is what we've talked about. His vibe affects the whole thing.
Yes. And, like, you're the guy.
It's not as much fun.
And, like,
to be in the locker room or to be in the building when Ja is pouty.
And, like, Cobb and I were talking about this. Even though Jaren has been spectacular this year, like, everything you could want.
Yeah, but he's not the A.
That's not his thing. Like, and also, there's a weird dynamic of, okay, well, it's like Jaren taking the team over. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it has to be Ja.
So your answer is Mike Brown?
I think Mike Brown could make some sense. I don't think, I'll say this. I do not think the Grizzlies would hire Mike Brown.
Because you don't think they'll ever hire someone who has their own opinions.
Correct. I think they want to hire someone that is holistically part of the process.
Well, now we're certainly putting the cart ahead of the bear. But anyway, do I believe that Ja
will... We've responsibly fired the coach after 4 years.
I'll answer the same question. Do I believe that Ja will lead them to victory tonight? I have to believe that. He's going to play. Santi's questionable. Conchar's questionable. But that's it. And Jaren's out. But that's it for the injury report. Grizzlies, hopefully...
10-point favorites.
Hopefully we'll win tonight as 10-point favorites. As bad it has been... They are 10.
At least we're not Dallas.
Favorites. If Penny clinches the regular season, if Memphis clinches the outright regular season championship tonight, that will be Penny's finest accomplishment as a Tiger coach.
I actually do believe this, and I understand the argument is the conference has never been weaker. I get all that.
Oh, yeah, what would be the other finest accomplishment? Winning the conference tournament?
Winning a conference tournament. I mean, technically
against Houston, although Houston was bad.
They beat the number one team. Like, they didn't play two or three guys, but they did beat the number one team. And, like, to me, though, the reason why I think this is his biggest accomplishment is it's more of kind of like a metaphor of winning the conference outright symbolizes to me what this season was, which was steady. It wasn't perfect, but it was really good.
This season is his best accomplishment.
Yes.
And so if that's what you're going to attach to symbolize
Correct.
This season, weirdly enough, the biggest accomplishment absolutely includes things that have nothing to do with the winning this conference title. They include the win over Michigan State, and include the win over UConn, includes the win over at Clemson, and includes like all of that. It goes into this. So I agree. Okay, let me throw out another one at you. Penny someday will lead this program to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I do believe that. Because I think... I mean, honestly, I think they've got a pretty good chance this year. I mean, we're talking.
But here's the, I'll just, for the sake of argument, let me put the counterexample.
Yep.
They had the year they had this year,
mm-hmm.
which was damn well perfect, right? Like pretty close.
Yeah.
Like it, and like everyone was on board. Everyone who you wanted to play well, played the role, everything else. You dominate in the non-conference schedule. You have a couple of hiccups in the conference schedule, but you're otherwise, you're going to win the conference outright, and you're still going to be underdogs in game two to get to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, but if
and
you look
so,
at...
And so why in the world, given that the conference is crap, and honestly isn't really, like probably going to get better, isn't Penny every year going to be fighting an incredible uphill battle to get to the Sweet 16? Because even if you have another year like this, when you get to the second game, you're going to be an underdog in game two.
I mean, to me, it depends. Do you believe that the SEC and the Big Ten are like separating themselves? Because I view this year's kind of bad fortune because of what the SEC did in the non-conference. They were going to have a higher volume of teams seated higher, so that's kind of pushing you down.
I think it's clear that if Penny stays another 7 years, he's going to get to a Sweet 16.
Yeah.
Right? And honestly, he doesn't – I would say yes to this as well. But it does – this year has demonstrated how damn hard – it has gotten harder. The job at Memphis has gotten harder than it once was.
I've been preaching
you
this.
You walked into this job, and the job that Josh had is different than the job that Penny has. It just is. And – it's getting harder. Among other things, you can't just wake up in the morning and see three Memphis high school players who are wanting to come to your program because they grew up in Memphis
yep.
and all they cared about was Tigers and they stayed here for their whole lives and everything else. Those days are gone. Your conference is totally disrespected, devalued, or just crap, whatever you want to say. And so it's really hard to get a high seed coming out of this conference. The schools that you're competing with in the SEC, all of a sudden... you used to have a bigger basketball budget than Ole Miss. Now Ole Miss has a much bigger basketball
yes.
budget than you. The job is much harder. I do believe that if he stays another, you know, length of time, he will get to a Sweet 16. But I also believe it's going to be uphill every year.
No, I mean, I'm with you, but to me, it's all about giving yourself opportunities. Like, realistically, he's been to the tournament twice. He had two pretty darn good opportunities, despite
yes.
the fact that they weren't seeded great.
They didn't have a great opportunity against Gonzaga.
They were up by 10 at half.
But it was freaking Gonzaga. That was the mm-hmm. problem. They gave them all they could want, but in the end, you fell.
Well, the real toe stub is the FAU game.
Well, that was, of course, yes, that was the real stub. Stephen A. Smith is going to run for president.
I still say I don't believe it. I know that he's polling well and he's talking about it. I still think, like, at the end of the day, he's going to want to keep making money.
So Stephen A. obviously gets the new deal, $100 million deal. It's 5 years, $100 million? Is that what it is?
I believe that's correct.
5 years, $100 million deal, which is really something. The guy started out as an NBA reporter. That's what he was, you know, I think in Philadelphia,
yep.
honestly. And hat tip to him. Like, he's figured it out, man. Like, he's not necessarily my taste completely, because he's more...
5 years, $100 million.
Yeah, but...
No, hold on. According to Marshawn, at least $100 million.
But what's interesting about it as well, and he's obviously very good at what he does. Like, right now, he's stirring it up. He's talking about the exchange that he had with LeBron. You know, he's always makes himself must-see TV.
Yep.
And, but what's interesting is that with this money... there, you're going to get less Stephen A., which I think is a good thing. And a good thing, by the way, for Stephen A.
Scarcity?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I feel ridiculously overexposed. The days that I'm on with Jason and John, whatever, and then I'm on with Gabe, like, who the 9 to 11's enough. Like, that's plenty. Or whatever. Like, people, and so he's not going to be on the NBA pregame anymore. He is obviously going to do First Take. He also is going to be allowed, which is just interesting because ESPN and pulled back on this for a little bit, and now they're going the other direction. he's allowed to talk politics. He's allowed to talk much more politics. He has been talking much more politics. And you see this across the, they're all in the spectrum. You see McAfee, right? Like whatever, you can, they can get into vaccines with Aaron Rodgers and whatever. So and there is occasional talk that he might run for president. I think you're right. I think, like, who the hell's going to rule anything out now? After what we've seen, who 100%. Would rule anything out, right?
No.
But I think you're right. I think it's a lot safer to sit there and make money.
And it's also, it's like,
if you run for president, here's the other thing. Half the people hate you out of the box.
Yeah, and then, like, on
you
top
know,
of that,
out
like,
of the box, they half start, the people hate you.
I mean, they're going to dig for every possible speck of dirt on you your entire life. And then do you want to subject your family to that? Like,
I don't think Stephen A. is going to run for president. I think I'm.
I think he likes talk. I think he likes the conversation being, could Stephen A. run?
All right. You love springing ahead, springing forth, springing ahead. It's we got a spring ahead Saturday.
Yep.
Right. It's which is it? What are we
spring
going
forward?
Spring forward. But what
fall
are
back.
We? Fall, what, I know. But what are we? What are we?
So
which is daylight savings time? Is that what
so
we're
this,
doing now?
We will begin daylight savings time.
When we spring forward?
Correct. We're on standard time today.
And do you want to spring forward?
Yes. Now, it sucks when you lose the hour of sleep. Like that. Like
what happens is it's then darker in the morning and you got more light in
correct.
The afternoon.
Correct.
I just look at my clock and I'm fine with whatever. The only thing I don't like spring about forward is the night of sleep
yes.
when I lose a night of sleep. The hour of sleep.
It's always the most hungover church service of the year.
So beyond that, I don't really care. You like it.
I like it because I just get depressed when you walk outside at 4:30 and it's dark.
Is it now?
Not, I mean, the days are getting longer, but this gives you, it's kind of like a sign of like, all right, the season's changing. It's going to be a bit light longer. Like summer's around the corner. You can smell summer. I love summer. I love heat. I blame you for wearing shorts last week, and now this weekend it's going to be miserable. I told you you were fighting with fire. You're playing with fire.
You think I personally...
Yes, you and my wife, y'all were trying to make spring happen.
I personally jinxed it. The Bengals are undefeated at cheapness.
I cannot believe this as much as I possibly do. Yes. Like, when you find out, you read the report, they see Max Crosby's contract,
they're
and
literally
their first,
the same
their
day.
First thing is, like, get Hendricks on the phone. You can explore a trade.
Yeah,
like,
first,
we will not be paying that.
They
yeah.
see what Max Crosby, edge rusher, is going to get paid, and they're like, Trey, go find a trade. Go, because we're not paying you that. I mean, it couldn't be more clear. It's so depressing. It has to be depressing. If you are a Bengals fan, because you don't look, I mean, they assembled quite some nice motherload of talent over there, and you just feel like it's being squandered by cheapness.
I said this in the fall. I don't know if I'd said it to you or if I said it on the other show. I wonder if we always talk about which of this, the new quarterbacks, the Josh, Joe, Lamar, Mahomes, like, okay, who are their historic equivalents? What if Burrow's Marino?
Well,
and the Dolphins did not do right by Marino.
How did they?
Like,
not?
More times than not, like they were cheap. Like,
I don't
putting,
think the Dolphins
putting
cheap.
Like a deep. They never gave him a defense. Like,
well, they never gave him a defense. But I don't think it was. I don't think it was parsimony. I think they certainly latter day Marino was all aired out. It was the Marx Brothers.
Yeah,
Duper and Clayton. It was that. Can we outscore you? Whatever. I don't know that it was like. I had to have to go back and think about it again. They let players walk out the door because they wouldn't pay them.
Yeah.
Bengals stuff. Like, there are, I mean, honestly, like, who else has been treated like that? Probably other Bengals, honestly. Probably Boomer Esiason, like, whatever. Just look back at other Bengals, and they've probably been treated like that.
Boomer was good though, but he's not.
No, Boomer's not.
This good.
He's not. No, he's.
Clearly. I think what would be even more aggravating is there are avenues now to combat the cheapness. You can invite private equity to come and give you a cash infusion, but like Mike Brown just refuses to do it.
Yeah. That would be incredibly infuriating. Anything else, particularly, by the way, we had Christian Kirk, who was dealt to Houston. The Jags dealt him to Houston. We had Bobby Wagner returning to the Commanders. We had Pac-Man Jones, shocker, saying he cheated NFL drug testing back in the day. Yep, no, that's true. Evidently, he cheated. We had whatever. A lot of extensions being reached. I don't even know who Derek Barnes is. Do you know who he is? He's a Lions linebacker. He reached an extension. So we had that as well. But
Do you really want to be extending Lions defenders?
Anything else particularly catch your eye?
I don't know if I've talked to you about this. Does it feel like free agency is bigger this year? And I was wondering if maybe implicitly...
You did say this, because the draft is less big.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're implicitly...
But free agency stinks this year, too. There's no good free agents this year.
Well, it's like a lot of it, though, is going to be like, are these guys really going to get traded and then extended?
There are, like, the signature, quote-unquote, free agents...
Yes.
...aren't free agents.
Right.
But they're Miles Garrett, they're Matt Stafford... You know, now yep. they were Max Crosby, who's gotten extended. Now they're Trey Henderson. There are no good free agents either, honestly. The draft isn't a high-profile draft, and the free agency isn't a high-profile free agency. The Southern Heritage Classic is going to, how do I phrase this? Alcorn and Arkansas Pine Bluff, not going to miss a beat with the Southern Heritage Classic.
No, I do not believe that.
No, I think in the end...
Part of it was Jackson State and Tennessee State.
There was a tradition there.
Yes.
People made the trip. I don't think you can just sub in another... Listen, I want to applaud Fred Jones for keeping it going. Frank Bonner did a really interesting story in the Daily Memphian today. And what happened was, obviously Jackson State had already bowed out when Deion was there, right?
Yep.
So then Tennessee State bows out. And I get it. Like, in the end...
They both got paid more to do it.
Here's the
game.
Truth. Fred makes money off of this game, right? As he should. He's a promoter. That's how it works. You promote it. You put on a great show. You bring people to Memphis.
He started this.
It's a great party. You invented it. It's your institution. And, of course, you make something for doing it, right? And at some point, the teams are like, we don't want to be subsidizing. You know, we don't want to be paying where you get whatever. We need a bigger share of the money. And so... That's what Deion said a long time ago. We think we can get more money, not by doing this. And so that's what happened. And then Tennessee State. I mean, more power to Fred Jones for making this damn thing happen for so many years. It's been a great Memphis event. But so JSU pulled out, and then TSU pulled out. When JSU pulled out, Arkansas Pine Bluff stepped in. Okay? So then you got Arkansas Pine Bluff against Tennessee State. Tennessee State leaves, and you're like, whoops, what are we going to do now? Well... The game that worked was Arkansas Pine Bluff was scheduled to play Alcorn anyway, right?
Yep. So
and they could do it on the 27th. That's when they could do it. But you're wondering, why haven't we heard about this game? And as Frank points out, what happened was you needed the Memphis Tiger schedule to be released.
Yep.
So you knew if there was an open date on the 27th, because that was it. Like, that's when they could play. And so I think just by happy coincidence and luck, there is an open date on the 27th. Memphis is not home on the 27th. And so the Southern Heritage Classic will survive. And yes, it will be different, but I'm glad it will be continuing, because it was very close to not continuing. All right, Jeffrey, one more restaurant question.
All right.
What do you want to go in the place where Houston's was a restaurant just like Houston's?
Yeah, I kind of believe that.
In other restaurant news, as we discussed earlier.
I had my fingers crossed of when our guy from Tops was just going to basically like keep it going. I was like, okay, please do that. Bring back
the
attendees.
We earlier talked about Cafe Olé, the Mexican place in Cooper Young, which is ending as Cafe Olé today. A dinner service will be the last time it will be Cafe Olé. It will then be transformed into something else.
Right.
It's not going away. It is going away. But the owner, Kendall Robertson, according to a piece in the Daily Memphian, is going to put something else in
Jeff,
there.
They call it a new concept.
Right. So long to Cafe Olé. Something else will be coming. We've earlier weighed in on this. Jeffrey wants a real sports bar.
Yes.
I want a Cuban restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
The other news, a couple other bits of news in the Daily Memphian. The Happy Mexican, which used to be downtown. Do you recall the Happy Mexican? It's been closed. I think it became Second Street Tacos and Tequila.
I thought they had like a bunch.
Now it's becoming Happy Memphis. Happy Memphis. But Houston's is the other one. There was a great tumult whenever that was. When was that? 2 months ago that Houston's closed?
Yeah, that sounds
shocked.
Right.
The news broke on our show.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
No,
could this be
somebody
true?
Somebody sent me a text, yes. And I was like, hey,
Houston's
is closed. We got news.
Yeah. Right. And in fact, I didn't mention it because I wanted on the air because I wanted to tell the Daily Memphian to get right on it because I knew it would be a big story.
Mm.
You then mentioned it at the very top of your show, I think, or whatever. So anyway, so you don't have that loyalty to the Daily Memphian. So Houston's, we now know that the Spell group of restaurants, and they own Brookhaven, Babaloo, yep. Whatever. They are going to be, that's the group that is going to be putting a restaurant in Houston's. And it does seem appropriate, doesn't it, that it is.
I mean, they have their initial restaurant is literally catty corner to it at Brookhaven.
Yes, but it does, no, but what's appropriate is that in Cafe Olay, they know we can't do Mexican here anymore.
Yeah.
It's worn out, it's welcome. The problem with Houston's at the end wasn't that people, I think people fundamentally liked the idea of a Houston's-esque restaurant.
Yeah.
They started to have complaints with that version of it, right? Who knows, whatever went wrong there. But I do think the restaurant that should go into Houston's should be very much like Houston's.
With chicken tenders.
With chicken tenders.
All I care about is bring the tendies back.
All Jeffrey cares about
is
bringing
save
the
tenders
back. All right. We're going to take a break. Frame Corner's been there 50 years. Like these other people can come and go, whatever else. Frame Corner, like the Palm Squad, like the Palm, like Memphis Palm, 50 years. 50 years ago was when Nixon resigned. 50 years ago was when People Magazine was launched. 50 years ago was when Happy Days, the TV show, was launched. And 50 years ago is when the Frame Corner opened up shop and started doing custom framing for people. And you know how you know you're good at doing custom framing for people? If you last 50 years. People keep coming back, and they tell their friends to come back, and they tell their friends to come back, and they say, hey, I got these beautiful prints I want framed, or I got the sports, where do I go? And they say the Frame Corner. And that's how you last 50 years. We were in there recently. We're waiting now. The stuff is being framed, and we can't wait to get it. We actually have more things that we need framed. Custom framing at the Frame Corner. You can buy a frame, of course, as well there. But what they really specialize in is beautiful, expert custom framing. 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. When we return, Sam Hardiman joins us on the other side. We got some talk about crime. We haven't discussed the public corruption case that has roiled Memphis and more. Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. We'll do that when we return. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Sam Hardiman. Sam couldn't join us earlier this week because he was at an MLGW meeting, I believe, of all the excuses to offer up. He was at an MLGW meeting, but he was kind enough to join us today. Sam, how are you?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you?
It wasn't
a deadline day.
It wasn't. It is. Jeffrey, did you know it was the NHL trade deadline day?
I did, only because I think I saw the story. Is Marchand on the trading block?
Yeah.
Sam?
How do you feel? Brad Marchand is the pest. He's a pain in the ass. He's the quintessential player. You hate him. Unless you're a Bruins fan, and he wants to stay in Boston, but he's a free agent at the end of the year. He's 37 or something. He's been a great Bruin, even a detestable human being. How do you feel about Brad Marchand being traded? The Bruins may trade him even though he wants to stay.
I would be heartbroken, but I would also try to tell myself that it could be for the long-term benefit of the franchise. But I would be heartbroken. He's one of my favorite players. Some would say I model my journalistic style after the way he plays.
I will say Aaron Lunch was very much a Brad Marchand encounter. That's exactly right. And so he's a little bit like Tony Allen leaving the Grizzlies, you know, when that happened. You know, he epitomized something about those hated Bruins, right?
Right. And also he's just a really, really good player too. The personality and just the fact that he makes you incredibly irrationally upset, like, overshadows just how skilled he is, like how many excellent shorthanded goals he's had over the years. Just such a fun player to watch. He was very effective for Canada and the Four Nations, actually, for such an old guy. And then he gets hurt, like, the first game back. The guys, we talked about this, the guys that are, like, played in the Four Nations Cup, they do not have a good injury situation right now, largely.
No. By the way, the biggest deal, and I don't know what's happened because I've been on the air. So Mikko Rantanen is this player who's a great player for the Avalanche, and he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. So Carolina went out and got him, paid a hefty price to get him. And now they've learned that he either doesn't like it in Carolina, or he's not been good since he's been in Carolina, or whatever else. He also played in the Four Nations, by the way. And Carolina may turn around and deal him again today. Is Mikko Rantanen still in Carolina? Rantanen still in Carolina as we speak? Do you know?
When we got on the air, he was.
Okay.
He is now. They're trying to figure out a team
Dallas
that would be willing to pay him.
Right. Most people aren't as focused on the trade deadline. Sabres may have something brewing with Ottawa, so we shall see. Anyway, that's not really why I have you here, as much as this is what I'd like to do for the next 20 minutes. You have to tell me, is it Pichardo? How does one pronounce his name? Fausto Pichardo.
Fausto Pichardo.
Okay.
Pichardo.
Tell the people who he is.
Yeah, so Fausto Pichardo is the former chief of patrol for the New York City Police Department. He was there for some time. Since leaving that department in 2020, he has been a public safety consultant, first for the city of New Orleans, the New Orleans Police Department. And then since July of last year, he has been a consultant for Memphis Mayor Paul Young and the city of Memphis and MPD.
And what's his role as a consultant?
So as a consultant, he has sort of a very broad contract that does not spell out the terms of his compensation because he's being paid by the private sector, including the folks at First Horizon Bank. But beyond that, he has a very broad role of essentially reviewing MPD strategy, reviewing its deployment, reviewing its data, and offering suggestions. And that's what it appears he's done in his time in Memphis, for sure.
And you have a two-part interview. Part two went up. It was today. Part one was earlier in the week. Does he? It indicated like he lives here. He lives here sometimes.
He lives here. He lives here downtown. He appears to live here a lot of the time.
Okay.
From my conversation with him.
All right. Well, the headline on the first part, and I confess, I didn't read the comments because I don't think Memphians want to hear this. And so I just couldn't imagine what the comments would be, and I therefore didn't go read them. The quote is, "I think Memphians are extremely, extremely hard on themselves because I see here, I've witnessed here what a tremendous city this is, and maybe it's me, but I feel safe everywhere I walk around. I think Memphians are so critical and hard on themselves. That's not fluff, man. I'm telling you what I believe. I read the paper, I look at the news, and it's just so everybody's so damn hard on themselves. Everybody's so hard on themselves, darn hard on themselves," Pichardo said. What did you make of that, and what was the reaction?
I did read the comments. They weren't as negative as you feared, Jeff.
No.
They weren't, I was actually surprised. I was like, all right, I'm ready for some Memphis self-hate here when I wait in, but that's not what we're here to talk about. What I made of that comment, right, is like was first, like I want to make clear, like Fausto Pichardo at no time in our interview hid from the fact that crime is a real problem in Memphis, Tennessee.
Right.
And we sat down for about 35 minutes, and like what we're talking about still remains one of the most dangerous cities in America by statistics, okay? But what was telling to me about what he said was, and he, you know, the rest of that quote, he notes, for example, like there are places you go in Memphis, Tennessee, where if you're up to something and you're there at all hours of the day, you're going to get shot or worse. Okay? Like, he was very clear about that. But what he's really saying is that there is a large perception of Memphis, Tennessee among Memphians that is, like, it's just dangerous wherever you are. And there are isolated incidents. There are things that happen that make you question, you know, right? But he was very much like, as an outsider, as a New Yorker, very, like, I took it as somebody who was like, okay, this place is bad, but it's not, oh my, it's not like the bad that the people think it is. That's what I took it as. Whether or not that's an accurate interpretation, I'm not sure.
Right. You write, Pichardo is bullish that Memphis's violent crime statistics will continue to fall. Why? On what is he bullish about?
Yeah, so I mean, and I mentioned this in the story today. You should read both these stories at DailyMailFan.com. Please do, because what I'm saying right now doesn't do them full justice.
Doesn't begin to capture all the detail that will be included.
Yeah,
just some of the highlights here. Yes, go ahead.
But what we're talking about here is, you know, he used the words targeted and precise over and over again. Okay, so did the mayor. And what they were talking about, the violent crime rate, is there's a real focus, you know, and how we see this, and it probably bears further investigation, but on organized crime, gangs, cliques, groups, whatever you want to call them, right, that are, you know, that are responsible, the police believe, for a large percentage of the shootings in the city of Memphis. And what he said, and there's a big quote in there that says this, that, like, it takes time to really build cases against these people. But if those cases are successful, you're taking a bunch of very violent people who are responsible for a lot of violence off the street for a long period of time, not 1 to 2 years where they're out again. And that's what he believes, and that's what he said, is going to drive sort of the crime rate. We just saw about a 20%+ decrease in homicides from record 23 to 24. Falling from a record to just somewhere on the mountaintop isn't that impressive. What he's talking about is going from there, sort of having a compounding way. If we keep finding the most violent people and putting them behind bars long term, the violent crime rate is going to go down, and it's going to keep going down. And, you know, that remains to be seen, and there's a lot of luck in that.
One of the things he talked about in today's, the portion of the Q&A that you have up today, is about the area around FedEx Forum and the downtown safety plan. And I wasn't, there's a quote about how, I'll read it. I did a lot of walking around downtown. I did a lot of walking on Beale Street. I did a lot of walking around the FedEx Forum. It's fine that we focus on that one square. It's one block square radius, right? But the truth of the matter is that the criminal element knows that in that one square block radius, there's a lot of cops that are going to be there, Pichardo said. So I guess my question is his point, like, it is very clearly an area of emphasis. The city wants a lot of cops there, and they want the criminal element to know that's a place where you're going to run into a lot of cops. It's a point you've made before. Every time you go there, you notice the police presence that's there. Is he indicating that you need to expand beyond that? Like, is he what did you think the point he was making there was?
Yeah, I think right. Like, there's, like, I think it's kind of like the counter to the counter, right? Like, we're talking about sports. Like, a basketball player has one move, the defender has a counter to that, so you need to have a counter, right? Like, that's what he's really talking about. And just saying that, like, okay, we've kind of pushed all this activity away, right? Because really that's what the police presence does. It acts like a force field that's going to push activity away. So he's saying that we also need to be watching all those places where we pushed it, okay? You know, and I think that's what he's really talking about there.
I see. And then finally, again, I'm just hitting on some of the highlights. I'll let people read. It's a two-part Q&A. You can read it over at the Daily Memphian. He talked about speeding on 240, and I do find this to be, on the one hand, it's Mad Max out there, and it creates creates the perception of that the city's out of control, and so it is a real problem, which he seems to acknowledge. But he also says that traffic stops can be overdone and a pretext for other things. There can be a lot of abuse and traffic. Did you have a sense of how you, what was his approach to sort of balancing those two things?
Yeah, I think, you know, and I was also, to be fair to him, asking him in the context of, like, hey, the Department of Justice civil rights investigation in the city of Memphis was critical in how
right.
The police department used traffic stops. Like, I was asking him, like, what's your sort of take on this? This was sort of the phase of the interview where I was asking him about, you know, the DOJ report, police
yep.
tactics. Because this is someone who's advising city leadership right now, right? And
yep.
so what they think during this time really matters. And what he was saying is he's seen it on 240. Like, he very much understood that contributes to the perception of crime, right? And I didn't use this quote, but he mentioned Poplar and Lamar as well, when you see people that are just going crazy. I mean, I was on Elvis Presley the other day, and somebody went by me at about 85. And, you know, that's a 45 zone. Like, I see it all the time as me, Sam Hardiman. So, like, he definitely mentioned that. But what he was saying also is, like, we cast this net. And he had this big quote about the net, where essentially, like, are you pulling over people that are just having a bad day and trying to get somewhere? And is that the person that society should be really concerned about? And I think that's the double-edged sword. Like, what he's illustrating is a double-edged sword. People really do want to feel safe on 240. They do not want to feel that they have to drive aggressively just to be safe, right? But at the same time, if you spend all your resources pulling people over, are you driving people into debt? Are you not doing other things? So, like, I think that's the context of what he's saying, and I think that's the balance that Memphis is always going to have until crime really does fall.
Right. Fascinating interview. You can read about it over at the Daily Memphian. The other story that you spent a lot of time recently is Edmund Ford Jr. and his recent charges. Explain to folks, in case they don't know, who is Edmund Ford Jr. and of what is he being charged with?
Yeah, Edmund Ford Jr. is a Shelby County Commissioner and former Memphis City Council member who is accused by the federal government of one count of bribery and six counts of tax evasion. He's accused of using the Shelby County Grants Program, which is discretionary money that's in the budget, where county commissioners dole out essentially, you know, in the thousands of dollars typically, maybe sometimes the hundreds, but really the tens of thousands of dollars, public money to various nonprofits throughout the community. The indictment, which was released a week ago today, spells out, he was charged a week ago yesterday, came out a week ago today. It spells out that Ford's private businesses, a computer business, a consulting business, would later receive payments from some of the nonprofits for whom he allocated grant dollars. And so that means that he was being accused of dealing public money to a nonprofit and then getting a kickback to his private businesses. He's accused of getting up to $250,000 in kickbacks. My colleague Lauren Testino and I traced all this. You can read it at thedailymemphian.com. The last kickback that he's accused of getting was 5/16/2023, and 9 days later, the FBI raided a Ford family home.
Is this, by the way, these discretionary funds, does every member of the county commission sort of have access to a certain slush fund or pool of money that they can, and are they do have to be approved by the entire commission? Is that
So this is, but the city council and county commission have different programs with different regulations. But essentially what has to happen boils down to people, every county commissioner, these things have to pass a county commission vote, but it's essentially, these are discretionary dollars. They've been used. I mean, these are the appropriating bodies. So both of these entities approve the budget. And so in every budget, they set aside a small amount of money in the low millions, compared to the relative budget, and they use it for grant dollars. And this is what it's used for. For a long time, people have worried about oversight of this program because of this. You know, how are you actually vetting the nonprofits that are working here? And it definitely shows that this indictment definitely shows that worry was valid.
Yeah. We got to get out of here, Sam. We appreciate it. Thanks for fitting us in this week, and a happy trade deadline day.
Thanks.
Yeah,
thanks.
Sam Hardiman. You can read his stuff. And you should, over at the Daily Memphian. We got to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkinshire, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We learned just now from Chris that the job, by the way, is he is a shoot-around, and Santi also a shoot-around participant for those concerned about their good health. So that's good news, Jeffrey. I see it turning around. I see it all turning around. It's all going to be turning around now. I will be at the Tigers game tonight. Hope to see a lot of you there. And before we go, I just wanted to take a moment and say how much I have appreciated working alongside Cindy DeBartolabin and Dennis Fuller since I have been here. They were both caught up in layoffs yesterday, and it's absolutely a gut punch because they are – they've been here a lot longer than I have, and they have meant a lot more to Odyssey, Entercom, whatever, than I have. You walk in here, particularly Dennis Fuller, who is, he has done your show, Jeffrey. He's been the producer.
Volunteered out of the kindness of his heart.
And is the kind of guy who just does everything. You know, volunteers, does everything. I would walk in here in the mornings, and he is a freaking cheerful presence no matter what is happening. He lifted me up. And then Cindy is the person who gets our prizes on Thursdays. But more than that, like, she's been part of heart and soul, part of this radio station and family radio stations and over at the river for a long time. This is the thing, kind of thing that happens. Corporations do this when they're mismanaged and badly run from the top.
Out of bankruptcy.
And then you have to make whatever. It is, not only is it no reflection on the kind of employees that they were, they are truly heart and soul employees here and colleagues and friends. And so for those of us at 92.9, it's been a little bit tough the last couple of days. I'm sure they'll be fine and do well because they're tremendous, talented folks. And obviously, there's a lot of this going around right now. It's tough to lose your gig, but it must be easier when you know, or at least you can take some comfort in knowing that you had an impact for many, many years, not just on the work, but on the people who you worked alongside. And that is certainly true of Cindy, and it is certainly true of Dennis as well. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next. Anthony Sane will be with Jason, and John Blake Topmeyer joins us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. We will be back Monday for an Hour Work Is Done.